Where did he get his extra quotations? Did he call them from Calvin?
That is a good question. In earlier work that I did, I was able to show that he didn't take them directly from that Florilegium that was compiled by Jean Crespin that I mentioned earlier. But I mean, he would have had access to any number of these texts in their whole. The printing industry of Geneva and the Genevan Academy itself had a library that would have contained a large number of not only patristic sources, but also sources that were recently translated out of Greek or still in the Greek, and Storer himself printed texts that were in Latin, Greek, French. He made a French, German, Latin dictionary. Ultimately there was, within Geneva, there was plenty of these sources in their full, and I guess in perhaps revised editions or modern editions for the time, available for him to use, as well as if we take him on his word that he employed the use of a learned friend or a learned individual, then he also would have been directed to which sources to add, perhaps, either by Simon Goulart, who Alain Dubois said, you know, they worked together on different projects. And so, I mean, you know, he could have taken, you know, use the help of any number of ministers that were also in Geneva at the time. So whether, to what extent he was using other people's help or just using the textual resources at his disposal, he would have had a number of texts that he could use from to draw these quotations.
I think we checked Calvin's Institutes, which is in the Cedar Doc database.
Yeah.
And that's not a source.
Mm. Yeah.
Even the fullest edition.
Yeah, and Calvin's Institutes. I mean, he could have quoted Calvin and added Calvin as an authority to this text, but Calvin himself is mostly quoting scripture. And I mean, there's Augustine. There's lots of Augustine in there, but for the most part, Calvin's quoting scripture. So, but all of these authors would have been available in Geneva through the printing activities of Geneva, or brought in from elsewhere. But in terms of directly tying which text he employed, I haven't been able to establish that at all.
As a footnote to the additive nature of what he was doing, the same thing was happening with the Glossa Ordinaria in the 16th and 17th century. So that the late 16th century editions of the Glossa are replete with Renaissance Greek philology that if you're not careful, you think, oh, they didn't do this in the 12th century. No, I mean, they didn't, of course. And again, it's additive. So they're not particularly deleting anything. They're just adding more.
Well, in Ecclesia, that's the case. But in other lemmata that Storer actively works on within the text, he's actually removing a lot. Mm-hmm. So Maria, which was originally one of the largest topics within Thomas's Manipulus Florum, gets chopped down, I think, by 2/3 or something like that. He doesn't take it out entirely, but he takes out a whole lot of it and replaces a lot of what he left. So it's a remarkably reworked version that's both shorter and contains a lot of different quotations. So he's not always just adding, but in the case of Ecclesia, he's pretty much just adding, but in other cases he's also taking away, and in other cases he's not doing anything, where if we assume that he's a very thorough editor, then he's read it over and he's like, he's fine with the way it is, he's like, I'm gonna print it as it is, I don't have to do anything to it. Or he could have skipped over it without putting that much work into it. But
yeah, that's kind of relates to my question. I mean, on the one hand, this is out of the Augustinian tradition. So, I mean, I think, you know, Protestants like Luther and Calvin did draw on that pretty well and probably be sympathetic to it. But on the other hand, it does seem to show a great deal of respect, though, to almost like tradition and the way, you know, he seems to leave a lot in. Probably even some stuff he left in could, you know, have a Catholic read versus a Protestant read, too. Mm-hmm. And so with that said, Did you ever find any passages where he edited like slightly, like changed a word here and there in the passage, or did he kind of reproduce those pretty much as is?
Yes. So in Eucharistia, he changed the word incorruptibiliter to incorporaliter, which, clearly reflects a Calvinist idea of the spiritual presence of God in the Eucharist. And so, that's, I think, one of the best one that I can think of, and the one that, yeah. Because, incorruptibiliter, anyone could have, the Eucharist is incorruptible, right? That works for anybody. But then saying incorporaliter, it not only does it make it non-Catholic, but even makes it non-Lutheran, because Luther, would have said there's a real presence, whereas, Calvinists were more about a spiritual presence, whatever. Right? That's a case of it sort of becoming a more, by switching that one word, becoming a more specifically Calvinist text. But again, you could look at something else, the next quotation might have been equally applicable to any faith. Mm-hmm. And that's the case with the text throughout. And even Ecclesia, none of these are strictly speaking Calvinist or Huguenot quotations. Used the right way or used in almost any way, they would have still been applicable to the Catholic Church, right? That's one of the, I think, one of the interesting things about the Reformation era is that they were using, not only that, they're using the same authorities and often the same arguments against each other, yeah. which makes this such an interesting thing. Especially with patristic sources, there was such a debate within Calvinism about the best way to approach the fathers. They loved Augustine, they loved Chrysostom, and everybody else. They sort of took the useful parts, and they didn't want to throw the baby with the bathwater sort of thing. But they also didn't think that an error necessarily damned the entire corpus. And so there's, this very complicated relationship that Calvinists have with patristic authority more generally.
Or even medieval sources. Bernard was pretty popular if you were careful how you used him. Right?
Yeah.
Just curious about the sources on the Antichrist and what he adds.
Not offhand. It's on my computer somewhere. I should have. Yeah,
it's not at the heart of your presentation. It was just curiosity.
Yeah.
What he sees as the new pertinent comments on the Antichrist, if they're kind of the same traditional selection of authors, or if it's a little more fringe.
If I remember correctly, they're just as mainstream of authors. They're just. They may have been. Maybe even chopping off a word here or there to make it, to give it a slightly different edge. But again, I'd have to go back and look at it again. It's been probably 9 years.
Your senior honors thesis,
yeah. So. I was in my undergrad when I last looked at that. So I don't remember that clearly.
You did a master's thesis on marriage, sexuality, the new topic on adultery.
Yeah.
I thought you would work that material up into just sort of a post-PhD version, but you've gone in a completely different direction. So it looks like there are really two papers here. Only one will be allowed, of course. Mm-hmm. Look forward to seeing the other one in print someday.
And I also still want to look at Clemencia, which I think is the last mm-hmm. of his added ones. So he added Adulterium, Clemencia, and Zelos. And I briefly looked at Adulterium and Zelos, I think, when I was an undergrad. Then Clemencia I'd like to look at because I spent a lot of time, my PhD was looking at the sort of that intersection of religion and politics in France at the time. And so Clemencia, I think, might be interesting one to look at in that regard.
Is Misericordia part of the original? Mm-hmm. So it kind of an obvious. It'd be interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
And they retain Misericordia as well as adds Clemencia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Misericordia. Oh, I think it's more God's mercy, whereas yeah. Clemencia would be authority, secular authority.
Yeah.
My guess.
As a side comment, wasn't that actually Calvin's first published work? Was a commentary on Seneca's De Clemencia? Is that right? Anyway,
yeah.
I'm not sure there's a connection, but just as a side.
Yeah, and it may be filled with Seneca, I'm not sure. But.
Well, my question, speaking of Seneca, do you, in either this edition or the the Catholic one that preceded it. Are there new classical sources, or are they pretty happy with what the 13th, 14th century had?
I can't speak at all to the Catholic version. But I can't remember if, because I mean, no one's really looked at Payen's version in much detail. I'm not sure. It would make sense that there might be a humanist influence that couldn't have been there before, but I'm not sure. And similarly, looking at Storer's edition, I've always been drawn more to the theological ones. He added new, like I mentioned here, he added Irenaeus, which wasn't present before, and, Socrates of Constantinople, and I guess other lesser-known Greek Christians. But I'm not sure if he added. I think Payen did add classical authors. I can't remember.
We've edited, there are about 200 editions. On the website. Hasn't really attracted any attention yet.
I'm just curious then, with the humanistic influence, were there philological implications with that? Were they editing some of the grammatical constructions? Do you know?
Well, that was happening already in the 1550 edition. That's when a lot of that type of editorial agency starts mm-hmm. taking place. I think with Payen and Storer, it's rather than correcting existing things, they're just adding new ones. So here's Payen's. Trying to think, because they had the list of authors towards the beginning. Maybe after this. Anyway, I'm probably taking up too much time by scrolling through here.
Have you looked at Wolford's edition of Cologne?
Just the preface.
I wonder if what he's reprinting there is Payen, or if he went to one prior to that and get rid of all of the extraneous materials.
Well, because even the Rosas say, though, that those later 18th, early 19th century editions that came out of Paris ended up with Storer's added topics in them, I think the Rosas say that. So I think eventually it just becomes a non-topic. And so here is... Yeah, I'm not sure if any of these are... Is anybody, any of those classical people not in the original?
Stobaeus. Demosthenes. Lactantius. Regius, but that's not classical. Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay. Payen then may have added new classical authors or non-Christian authors.
I had a very small question. Maybe I missed something while you were giving your paper, final paper. May I know if the entry on predestination experiences some changes? Because I
there's a few that I was surprised that nothing happened to, and that was what, I remember, I think it was actually just a few weeks ago, and I want to talk about the ones I've looked at already, and I want to look at a new one. It ended up being Ecclesia, but I think Predestinatio, I figured, that's got to be a gold mine, but it actually
a highly theological entry in the Manipulus Florum, but I imagine it would have been at least an occasion for catechism or not even for a place for debates, for theological debates, but at least for recalling.
At least throwing in some of Augustine's stuff that tended towards, God's will or something like that, anything might have been useful, but he doesn't really do much of anything.
Well, but I think the piece in all these things, you have to put the edge on it. It's a tool, but you have to give it its application. It's not going to do the work for you. You can give even a more leading text, but if you don't drive the point home to your congregation, and you get a perfectly quote-unquote, orthodox, Catholic, whatever you want to call it, statement, and you can use it to your purpose. And in the same way, it's one of these modified ones, if the rest are correct and we're remembering correctly, the later 18th, 19th century editions, you can take, you know, Rome is destroyed by gold, and you can give that a perfectly fine Catholic gloss, or you can use it in a very different way. So again, I think it can be used effectively by many.
Oh yeah, I mean, like in this era, that would have been perfectly useful for Catholic reform itself.
Yeah.
And so yeah, and there's nothing that almost entirely none of these are exclusive to one faith or another. But the fact that they're added at a specific time, lends itself, Storer was adding these for the reason that, you know, he saw them as useful to Calvinists, but taken out of that context, they could have been useful for Calvinists as well.
Been a strategic thing in terms of the censors, like predestination was such a huge Calvin idea, right? But that's kind of the first place they look to see. And if nothing's changed, maybe this version is okay, right?
Like, mm-hmm. And I mean, it may have been such a delicate topic that short pithy quotations weren't a good way to deal with it. Because I mean, like Calvinists amongst themselves, like Huguenots amongst themselves, spilled ink, you know, for decades over. I mean, like within France, the two main academies disagreed with each other ever so slightly about hypothetical, universal predestination. So maybe this just wasn't the time or the place to get into it, because you can't do that with pithy quotations. Because, I mean, even with Ecclesia, you're not getting a comprehensive discussion of church structure or the roles of deacons and preachers and elders. And, you know, like, there's no comprehensive ecclesiology in here. There's useful quotations that can be used to, you know, define the church in relation to God or in opposition to what they see as the problems with the Catholic Church.
Yeah. I was going to say, too, in regard to this, in the Carolinian period, you had, like, the, you know, double predestinationists, Gottschalk, and the single ones like Origina, and they both kind of use the same authoritative text, just put a different spin on them. So in some ways, the text can be neutral, pretty neutral on predestination.
They're dangerous, period.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a dangerous topic. Augustine himself is like, this is tough stuff.
Yeah. You
know? So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how you kind of arrange it. It's going to be charged.
Anything coming
up? Yeah, a few. So Mark to Nick says, nice to see you, Nick. Congratulations. I enjoyed your paper. I'm sorry I can't stay for the comments. So he's gone. And then to Maria, il me dit, je regrette de sortir tôt, mais je dois aller. J'ai l'intention d'écouter la conférence enregistrée.
So,
okay. And then to Chris, he says, thanks for organizing this colloquium and putting it online. Hi to the family, too. That was Mark's last.
Who was the one with the message?
Mark Sells.
Oh, Mark Sells.
Mark Sells. Mark Sells. He likes it.
Another growing product.
Professor Garing is
well represented here.
Well represented. He's
also listening. So.
Just say good things.
Prolific.
Okay, and that's the only,
Well, I back. It's still used again.
Mm-hmm.